I want to talk to us today about impossible situations. So I'm not going to ask you how many currently are in an impossible situation, but how about a show of hands, have you ever gone through a situation that seemed impossible? That when you looked at it, it's like, there is no way that I can get myself through or out of this situation. That I need God, who loves us, who saved us, who sent Jesus to die on the cross for us, who does the miraculous, and who has the power and the ability to overcome any situation. He is the one who is to overcome these seemingly impossible situations. Well, that looked like a fair number of you sometime in your life. And I sort of have a feeling some of those are now, from situations that I am aware of, that are seemingly impossible. So what we're going to do today, we're going to look at three of those seemingly impossible situations in the Word. How did the people respond? How did God respond? What can we learn from those situations? So we're going to start with the Israelites. So after Joseph, so I want to set the stage a little bit. After Joseph, it said that Pharaohs arose that did not remember Joseph and did not remember the promises and all those kind of things. And they made the Israelites slaves. Okay? The Israelites weren't just slaves to an individual, but they were slaves to a whole nation. So this wasn't an issue of God just setting one person free, two people free, a handful of people free. This was that God had to remove them from under a powerful ruler with an army at his disposal. Would you agree that that's a seemingly impossible situation? One that they could not free themselves from. Yes? That's similar to the situation that we were all in before we accepted Christ. We were enslaved to sin, and we were part of a kingdom of darkness, and there was no way for us to get out of there by ourselves. And that's why, of course, God sent us a Savior in Jesus. They really had no assurance. I want you to remember the prophetic words this morning. And neither of them knew what I was talking about. God did, though. They had no assurance that God was even aware of their situation, or that he heard their prayers, or that he had a plan. Why? Because this had now gone on months, months, years, years. So we have the nation of Israel here in slavery, in Egypt. And we have this man, Moses, out here in the desert. He's been out here for years and years. He didn't have any contact with them. They didn't have any contact with him. And so he was not part of their idea of what a solution would look like. But God had a plan. And we know that God spoke to him through a burning bush. So just a thought. Are you expecting God in unexpected places and unexpected ways? So I don't know. Burning bush. You know, what if you were driving down the highway and saw a burning car on the side of the road? Would you think, well, maybe God could speak to me through a burning car? Moses didn't think he'd speak through a burning bush. So I'm just throwing out there. God can do the miraculous. God had a plan. He was going to use a person, and he was going to do the miraculous. God had a plan. He was going to use a person. He was going to do the miraculous. So let's pick this story up. Those of you that like to follow along, this is in Exodus chapter 3, verse 7. Exodus 3, 7. So this is the Lord speaking to Moses now out of this burning bush. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. They didn't know that, but he did. And have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians. Well, that's interesting. God says that he's coming down. He's involved, but I would say he certainly used the person, didn't he? I mean, I'm assuming that he could have done it without, but he usually uses a person. So I thought that was just sort of humorous that I'm going to deliver. And to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land. 9. Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. He heard their prayers. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. So not only did he hear their prayers, but he knew their exact situation. Therefore, come now, I will send you. Okay, this is my plan, but I'm going to send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. Verse 16. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has appeared to me saying, I am indeed concerned about you and what has been done to you in Egypt. So God does care. He does know when you're in the midst of a difficult situation. He does know when you're in what seems to you to be a seemingly impossible situation. He does care. 19. But I know that the king of Egypt will not permit you to go except under compulsion. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of it, and after that he will let you go. So he gave this message to Moses, and he says to Moses, now you gather the elders, and you tell the elders, and the elders will then communicate to the people that I've heard their prayers, I've seen their affliction, I have a plan, and I will do the miraculous to set them free. Okay, 21 and 22. I will grant this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall be that when you go out, you will not go out empty-handed, but every woman shall ask of her neighbor and the woman who lives in her house of articles of silver and articles of gold and clothing, and you will put them on your sons and daughters, thus you will plunder the Egyptians. So God was saying, you won't just barely squeak out of this situation, but you will squeak out of this situation in such a way that you have an abundance. So when I get you out of this situation that seems impossible to you, you will actually turn what the enemy meant for evil into something good. So do you know who said that? You meant it for evil, but God turned it to good? Joseph. Ah, somebody else who walked through seemingly impossible situations. Okay? So this is our number 2 of 3. So here's Joseph. First impossible situation, he gets thrown in a pit. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever fallen down a literal pit and couldn't get out. But how many of you have felt like you were in a pit? You were in a hole. Things were dark. You couldn't figure out how to climb out. It was deep enough that you could look up, but there's just no way I'm getting out of it. A seemingly impossible situation. So he finds himself out of the pit. Now he's a slave. Oh, yay. But it's interesting to me, every time I think of Joseph, is that he was enslaved to Potiphar, but it says God's blessing and favor were on his life, and Potiphar gave him a little bit of control over his things, and then it went to the point that he saw, whoa, he really knows how to handle things, God's favor and blessings on his life, and so I'm going to give him control over everything. And so he does. So it says Potiphar isn't concerned about his welfare. He isn't concerned about, you know, is this being taken care of? Is somebody watching over my investments? He let Joseph handle all that. So then the next thing that happens is Joseph is falsely accused. He didn't do anything, but the evidence looked contrary. Why? Because the wife yanked his garment off. It's there in his room, her room. So when you look at the evidence, it seemed like he did do the thing that he was accused of. So then where does he end up? Okay, he gets from one situation to another situation to another situation. Now he's in prison. And this is the federal prison. You know, he's not in Cumberland County. He's in the Pharaoh's prison now, where Pharaoh puts his prisoners. And it says that the warden, the person who oversees the prison, noticed that God's favor and blessing was on him and gave him control over all the other prisoners and over the prison. So now Joseph is in there days, weeks, months. Don't you think you would be saying, I would be saying, God, enough is enough. First it was my brothers, and then it was slavery, and then it was Potiphar's house, and his wife accusing me. Now I'm in a prison. Do you remember the prophetic word this morning? You say, God, it's been long enough. You forgot about me. Here I am. Enslaved again. Back in a situation that I can't get myself out of. And we know where that story ends. The same way we knew where the story ended for the Israelites. Okay, they ended up in the Promised Land. Joseph ends up being the second ruler under Pharaoh of a whole nation. He not only saves the nation of Egypt, but he saves his own nation. So, hopefully you've caught my 4 points. But I'm going to give them to you so they're nice and clear now. So the 4 points for this morning is that, number one, God does care. God does care. You might not feel that way, but he made it very clear that he was aware and he cared. Number two, he does have a plan. Yay! That means it's not up to you to get yourself out of the situation. What you do need to do is align yourself with God's plan. You know, Moses could have said no. Joseph could have said, well, that stinking Pharaoh put me in here. I'm not going to translate his or interpret his dream for him. Okay? So you have to partner with the plan, but God has a plan. Yay! God has a plan. Number three, he will use a man or a woman to help bring us through. He usually uses a person to help bring us through. And number four, he will do the miraculous on our behalf. He will do the miraculous on our behalf. All right, so we were in a story and we told a story, so now we have to go back and finish our story. Okay, we were reminded of Joseph because God will turn what the enemy meant for evil to good. So back to Moses and the Israelites. So Moses and Aaron went and talked to the elders, told them what the Lord had spoken to them, told them what God's plan was, and the elders told the people. And here's the people's response. So the people believed the message. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel, and that he had seen their affliction, then they bowed low and worshiped. So if you are talking with somebody who's in a seemingly impossible situation, and you want to try to direct them back to God, the two things they need to know, God cares, and he has a plan. Because more than likely, they're believing the opposite of both of those. They're thinking God doesn't know my situation, or since I guess I can agree that he knows everything, he knows and he doesn't care. So when they told the people God knows and God cares, their reaction was the people bowed and worshiped God. It turned them back to God. It raised their hope. Now, a couple questions. Does that mean then that deliverance will always be quick? No. Does it mean that deliverance will always be easy? No. Will it require your participation? Yes. And will it probably require God to do the miraculous? Yes. Otherwise, it would not seem like an impossible situation to you if you could figure it out. And nobody works harder to figure out situations than me. When I have a situation I'm trying to figure out, I think through every possibility, everything that I could do, the advantages or disadvantages, the consequences, the pluses, the minuses. I might even make myself a list. These are the positive things. Yeah, I actually do. And these are the... And then I think about it as soon as I get up in the morning. And then I'm going through the day and I'm like, okay, I really have to get my mind on work. Okay. And then at night, then I'm laying down in bed trying to go to sleep and I'm thinking about it again. Sounds like you do that. There's more than one of me. Boy, that's a little scary. Okay, so we need to know these four things. We need to keep reminding ourselves. God cares. He has a plan. He will use a man or a woman, and he will do the miraculous. All right. Situation number three, our last situation. The Israelites got themselves out of slavery. They eventually made it through the desert, the wilderness, which is like 100 sermons just in itself, with what they did and didn't do and believed and didn't believe, what wore out and didn't wear out, how God provided for them, and da-da-da-da. And now they're in the promised land. Okay. So now you think, well, I'm in the promised land. I won't have any more difficulties. Right, Nancy? Yeah. So they had enemies all around them. One of the enemies was the Philistines. And the Philistines would battle them like once a year. In fact, if you remember the story about David and Bathsheba, it starts by saying, in the time of the year that the kings go out to battle. Really? I mean, you have it scheduled now? Every January, we're going to war. We don't know who, but next January, we're going to be ready and go to war against somebody. So it was like a regular thing. They battled the Philistines. One time, they would lose a certain number of men. The next time, the Philistines would lose a certain number of men. Back and forth and back and forth. And so they had these ongoing battles. So I'm not sure where the Philistines got this idea. It doesn't tell us. But they decided this particular battle month, when they were going against Israel, that they were going to do something different. It was not going to be our two enemies clash and we're playing, what was that, conquest? Or, you know, you try to, Stratego, and, yeah, but the one where you try to take the nations and who has the more risk. Or, okay, so we're not doing, let's see who can show up with the biggest army and who can kill the most. Okay, that we've already played that game and it doesn't really work. So we've come up with a new idea. So here's our new idea. You send out a champion. We'll send out a champion. And if our champion beats your champion, you will be our slave. So I want you to think about that with me a minute. They didn't want to kill their enemy, didn't want to kill the nation of Israel. They wanted to threaten and intimidate the nation to such a point that when they won this, the Israelites would do everything the Philistines asked them to do. So if the rulers of the Philistines wanted the Israelites to cut a forest down and build them boats, they would contact their leaders and say, this is what you're going to do because you are slaves. Right? Yes? You following me? Okay. Don't let me lose you here. We're going somewhere. Sometimes the enemies that come against us, the things that try to defeat us, are not totally removed the first or even the second time we battle against them. True? Anybody find that to be true? So with these Philistines, it wasn't one battle and we're done. Okay, so Pastor Steve, you're talking about something that happened a couple thousand years ago. We're trying to relate, but how about giving us some specifics? Okay, an addiction issue. Isn't that a seemingly impossible situation? It wouldn't be called an addiction if you could stop and start when you want it. And people stop and start and stop and start and win the battle and lose the battle. How about a battle in your mind against lies? You hear something, you're unworthy, you're this, you're that, you're not enough of this. And so you battle that and you get victory over it, but then 6 months later, oh, it's back again. Okay, so some enemies are not defeated with just one or two. Pride, you, lust and impure thoughts, reoccurring fight against anxiety or depression. That's a nasty one. These things require continued warfare until they are completely defeated and no longer a part of your life. Back to the Israelites. Back to Goliath. So they send out Goliath. Is the first 2 points of our sermon applicable to them? Did God care and did he have a plan? You actually can answer that. That wasn't a rhetorical question, so let's try that one more time. Did God care and did God have a plan? God was aware of the situation, God cared, and God had a plan. One of the ways we know that is because he had a young man trained and prepared to win this battle, to defeat this enemy who seemed undefeatable. Another seemingly impossible situation. So here again, we have separation in distance and contact and all of that. So they're here fighting Goliath. So their army's here. The Philistines are over there. The Goliath comes out. He says, so who's going to fight me today? And the Israelites are like, I don't think anybody volunteered today. Come back tomorrow. And so then David shows up. We're not sure of David's exact age. He could have been as young as 13 or he could have been 17, 18, but somewhere in that space. These are men, soldiers, in the army, trained. Okay, armor, swords, spears, whatever. He shows up and he says, why are you letting this happen? Here's this enemy. Isn't God on our side? He knew that God was on his side because he had seen God help him overcome seemingly impossible situations before. He was tasked with caring for his family's sheep, and I don't know if any of you think that you have the skill. Okay, well, Mr. Bear Hunter over there, but most of the rest of us, we don't know that we have the skill, if a bear came out of the woods, that we would stand there and try to defeat the bear. I mean, I'm leaving. You know, where is my Jeep? How soon can I get out of these mountains? You know, or I'd be climbing a tree and hope that he's just too stupid to climb a tree. I don't know, something. But I wouldn't stand and fight a bear. Okay? How about a lion? And this isn't the lion from the Wizard of Oz. You know, this is an actual chew up and eat people for breakfast lion. So both of those were seemingly impossible situations. And somehow in those situations, David knew God cared. God had a plan. God can use me to defeat this lion and this bear, and he will do the miraculous. So he had already seen God do those four things, and here he shows up. Couple interesting things that I noticed. Now that I like to leave here and come and talk to all you, when I come back, I can't always find where I... So it takes me a minute. Okay. So those who knew him best are the ones that didn't recognize that he might be the solution. You know, you'd think after reading these stories, I read the Bible front to back how many times, and I taught from this so many times, but that really jumped out to me. He shows up, and his brothers are like, what are you doing here? And he said, well, Dad sent me with some cheese and bread and stuck a couple muffins in. And so you can all enjoy that, but why are you guys not doing something about Goliath? And they said, who do you think you are? You're the youngest. You're our brother. You're nothing special. Who do you think you are? You know, you'd expect your family to go, yay, David, go for it. Yeah. Didn't. So then he goes and talks to the king, and the king is like, I don't really think you can do this, but if you want to try my armor on, maybe you won't get killed in the first 3.5 seconds that you're out there. And so he puts his armor on him, and you know that sermon. That's another whole message. You can't be anybody other than who God has called you to be. You can't fit anybody else's shoes or anybody else's armor. So he goes out, and he's there with Goliath. So let's pick the story up there. That is in 1 Samuel. Okay, we there? 1 Samuel 17. Let's pick the story up in 40. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even his own pouch, and his sling, which was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. At some point, if you want to be victorious over your enemy, over this addiction, over this thing that seems seemingly impossible, you need to be willing to approach it. You need to be willing to admit that, yes, you have a giant. Think about it. You have a giant standing in front of you. Sometimes what we do when we have a giant standing in front of us is we're so afraid to admit that he's there, we pretend he's not. No, I don't really have a problem with that. What makes you think I have a problem with that? Okay. So admit that the giant is there. And yes, that'll scare the CRAP out of you when you turn and look and there he is. I forget exactly. 9.5 or 10 feet? Isn't that what he was? Really? I thought it was 9 or 10. 14.5 feet. Wow. That's a big guy. Yeah. That's bigger than Kareem. That's big. Okay, so this ceiling is what, 7.5 feet since it dropped down? So, yeah, okay. Fellowship hall to this. Yeah. Some of the enemies we face are that big. They really are. And when you decide you're going to battle that enemy and you turn and face it, you may really have some fear. What you need to remind yourself, God, what's number one? Cares. What's number two? Okay. Then the Philistine came on and approached David. Oh. So now your giant's walking toward you. He's no longer content just to stand there and say, who wants to fight me today? He's now approaching. Yeah. So here's this 15-year-old boy. I think I would turn and run. Okay. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you think you can beat me with sticks, or you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Lovely. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." Yeah. So, I'm not sure. This analogy was not in my notes. But when I'm reading that, and I do happen to like the movie, I'm picturing all of them standing in front of the Wizard of Oz. Didn't that one do really good shaking and scared to death really well? That was the Cowardly Lion, and then he runs and jumps out of the window. Okay, so with me, if the giant said, "I'm coming to you today, and I'm going to feed you to the birds of the..." I'm going to not eat you. "Give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field for them to eat." I think I'd be doing a little shaking in my boots. Then David said, because he knew that God will do the miraculous on his behalf. Then David said to Goliath, the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin." So, yep, you're pretty big. You have pretty powerful weapons. You didn't just come at me with just a sword, or just a spear, or just a javelin. You're standing there with all three. "But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you down and remove your head from you." Got to be sure that thing is dead. Not just striking down, but remove your head. "And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the..." Exactly what he had said would be done to him. "And then all this assembly will know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or spear." So in other words, the things you're throwing at me, that's not what I'm going to throw back to you. "For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Now, I don't know about you, but that's a phrase that number of times I would have liked to have put on the refrigerator and carried the refrigerator with me all day. Because all throughout the day, I needed to remember, battle's the Lord, battle's the Lord, battle's the Lord, right? Okay. So one other thing that jumped out at me this time that I thought about that I don't know that I thought about before. Why was David so sure that this was a battle that God was going to do on his behalf? Because you realize he threw the stone, but what did God do? God made sure it hit where it needed to with the force it needed to kill someone. You know, we've all known people that have gotten hit with things and it didn't kill them. And they weren't 14 feet tall enough. They can't even imagine the size of the head. People get hit with a softball. Knocked out. Don't get killed. Right? Okay, so anyway, getting off track. God enthusiastically joined in this battle because he had a destiny for the nation of Israel, and that nation was not for them to be in slavery. So if God had a plan for them as a nation, and it did not include being in slavery, then he certainly was going to join in, and the battle was the Lord's. Just trying to decide which way I want to go here. So let's review, because you know when you're in the middle of a seemingly impossible situation, that's not always the best time to try to remind yourself or to do a Bible study and come up with these 4 points. Because you're maybe discouraged, maybe you're in darkness, maybe you're afraid of the giant that you've acknowledged standing in front of you. So let's make sure we get this. And sometimes we need to tell somebody else this. It may not be us personally going through this situation, but we're talking with somebody at work, or we're talking with somebody that we've known for years, and they say, boy, this just seems like an impossible situation. Well, you know what I'd like to share with you? God cares. He has a plan to deliver you. He will probably use people to accomplish this, and He will do the miraculous to bring you through to victory. That should be encouraging. Don't you agree? All right. I feel like I've talked enough. What I want us to do, let's stand. 2 weeks ago, I think it was, Pastor Kurt spoke about brokenness and healing and that kind of thing. And I was in here last week, and I haven't had a chance yet to listen to Vans, but I'm going to do that. But God, He's trying to get us to acknowledge where we actually are, not how we look to each other when we come in on Sunday morning. That is not easy. Because we don't want to come in and say, I have pain, I have something I'm dealing with. But if you don't admit the giants there, you're not going to trust God for His plan to defeat that enemy and to defeat that enemy completely. Okay? So if you have a situation that seems to you, and see, that's the key. It seems to you that there is no way you can get yourself out of that situation. Or you know somebody who is in a situation like that. It's going to have to be God that sets them free. And we're just going to stand before God and say, Lord, I need You to join in and battle with me. Tell me what Your plan is, how I can get through this impossible situation. So, Father, as we've chosen today to draw close to You, to step into Your presence, we've wanted to hear from You, and You've spoken to us. You've spoken to us. And You wanted us to hear clearly today that you know the details, you know the situation, you know that this is a situation that we cannot get ourselves out of, and You care. You know, Father, we almost forgot that You care. But You want us to be convinced today that You care. You also want us to understand today that You have a plan. We don't have to figure it out. We can't figure it out. It won't be our plan that will set us free. It's Your plan. Your plan. So we want to step into and in agreement with Your plan today. Make that clear to us. Open our eyes to see, our ears to hear. Convince us that You have a plan, and reveal that plan to us. Father, if it involves a person, maybe a person we've not ever thought of, person that we didn't know that you were preparing. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's somebody right there available to us in our lives. But if you want to use a person to get us through this impossible, seemingly impossible situation, we give you permission to do that. We say, Lord, you use who you desire because it's your plan. It's not my plan. And so the people I thought might help might not be the people that you want to help. So we say, we give you permission to use whoever you want to tear down and cut the head off of that Goliath. And Father, because you've told us that the battle is yours, because it's your plan, and you're helping us to step into what you've destined for each of us to step into, we are believing that you are going to do the miraculous. Above and beyond what doctors, therapists, medication, counselors, friends, or ourselves can do. The miraculous. The miraculous. The miraculous. In your word, we see over and over and over and over again that you are willing to do the miraculous. Jesus did the miraculous. And Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So Jesus, we welcome you into this situation, and we are looking and expecting you to do the miraculous, whatever that looks like. Do the miraculous. Do the miraculous. Do the miraculous. Your disciples said, Lord, increase our faith. So if that's a stretch for us right now, this moment, increase our faith to believe you to do the miraculous. And then, Father, we'll be able to share testimonies. Not what I did. Not how I got myself out of the situation or through the situation. Not how I defeated the addiction or the fear or the anxiety or the depression or whatever it is, but how you did it. We will give you the glory as we share a testimony of how you got us out of a seemingly impossible situation. So we say, do it, Lord Jesus. And in agreement, we all say, amen. Let it be so. You are dismissed.